This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Number two at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Before we get underway with some NBA news and notes, that's right, we want to connect with you. Join us at Twitter at eRadio Sports. And as always, we like to guide you guys. Go to our podcast page at podcastarena.com. Well, indeed, it is time to talk some NBA and one of the biggest trades of the offseason. I'm telling you what, some high anxiety. I was unsure if it was going to truly go through with Kyrie Irving and Isaiah Thomas. Obviously, it was on hold for concerns over Thomas's injured hip. So here to help us break it all down tonight, what happened, the deal did go through, from CNN Sports, their feature writer, my good friend Motez Bashara. And I have to say, Motez, it is so wonderful. On a personal note, it's just wonderful having you on because I know you're going to encourage all of our beautiful listeners here in Houston who are struggling mightily tonight.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
We love you.
It's a special time to come on the show. And, my heart obviously goes out to Houston and everyone suffering at the moment with this, with this tragedy. But hopefully things will turn around for the better.
Absolutely. We've talked about it a lot on the show tonight. So let's talk some NBA. How concerned were you that this the trade, that it might not ultimately go through between Kyrie Irving and Isaiah Thomas? How concerned were you that the deal might fall through?
So I think the Cavs were suffering from what they call buyer's remorse.
Okay, we've been there. Yeah,
exactly. In other words, they make a big purchase,
we've all
they make
experienced
a big deal,
yep.
And then they have second, third, and fourth thoughts about it. And they were maybe thinking that they got hosed a little bit because of Isaiah's injury, or maybe they just thought the deal wasn't that great for them. In the end, I think they decided to just pull the trigger and say, "Okay, look, we're going to take it as it is because we don't have any better options." Except, of course, they could have just kept Kyrie and lived through that. I like the deal for the Celtics. I think any time you get a player of Kyrie's caliber, who's a top five player in the prime of his career, who's an NBA champion, you got to make that trade, and they come around so rarely that you got to do it.
The NBA conversation continues with Motez Bashara, CNN Sports feature writer, after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We'd love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at eRadio Sports. You can always go back and listen to each and every one of our interviews if you happen to miss at podcastarena.com. Right now, we're going to rejoin CNN Sports feature writer, that is Motez Bashara.
I thought Boston should have traded Isaiah around the NBA draft.
You did.
And you were a little surprised by that. And, of course, Ainge apparently did have ideas to trade Isaiah. He was just waiting for the right time. So, I mean, the Celtics are trading an undersized point guard. Yes, a guy who can score a lot but who can't guard anyone, who's also injured probably till about Christmas time. And they get one of the top five players in the NBA, a guy who I match pretty much neck and neck with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. So I love what the Celtics have done with this. Yes, they gave up a few role players, a first-round pick of this year and next year, but I think ultimately they'll be in better shape.
Motez Bashara back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You can check him out online, CNN Sports feature writer. He is also an author. His book that he released a few years ago, Beating the NBA, Tales from a Frugal Fan. So how much, the Cavaliers, when we talk about them, how much is it going to hurt not having a healthy Isaiah Thomas? For, we're talking about, he's not going to be like out 3 months. We're looking at what, longer than that. It would be after the first of the year, 2018, from what I understand.
It's going to be an adjustment for sure. And the fact that he's not going to be in training camp with them and learning how to play with LeBron James is going to be a bit strange for them. And, you know, the clock is ticking for LeBron. He's not that young. He's probably about 35. And I think he wants to win right now. So As it stands, I guess their starting five is going to be LeBron, J.R. Smith, Crowder, who they just got, Kevin Love, and Thompson. And that's still probably good enough to, you know, finish one or two in the East, but how far they can go in the playoffs is anyone's guess.
You know, you have to wonder, too, if this trade would have been voided with Irving and Thomas, just how desperate both of these teams would have been feeling. Here it is. It's Friday. It's September 1st. I mean, there would have been truly some serious anxiety. But it's a good thing it all worked out, ultimately.
Yeah, more for the Cavs, I think, just because they felt like they had to do something about Kyrie. Just because I suppose they didn't want a malcontent playing alongside LeBron and that sort of thing. I know their first choice was they wanted it to trade him to the Suns, and they wanted a package that included Josh Jackson. And the Suns did not want to release Jackson because, quite rightly, they think he's got massive upside, even for Kyrie. So I guess this was just the best thing they can do, even though it was strengthening their biggest rival in the East. I wouldn't have done it personally, but that's just how it went.
Motez Bashara with us at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, the Big East Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. Always love talking some NBA. That brings a smile on my face. So talk to me about Motez. Who do you think made some of the best trades in the offseason? Give us some of the best. And also, I'm not a negative gal, but we got to talk about some of the worst trades that did transpire.
Okay, I'm not on top of every single trade, but I got to say, the Clippers sending Chris Paul away to Houston, I don't know if it's a great trade for Houston, but this is, I think, going to kill the Clippers. I can't see them really as a playoff team anymore. I think that they're just like a rudderless ship sinking. On the upside, though, the Pelicans signing Rajon Rondo, I don't think it was a trade, but I think they signed him as an unrestricted free agent. I think that is super intriguing. You got Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, and Rajon Rondo steering the ship, and you got Drew Holiday on that team. I think that could, in fact, be a playoff team. Why not?
Okay. Hey, Motez Bashara. Yeah, go ahead.
Of course, you also have Jimmy Butler going to the Timberwolves, which I think is also a very intriguing trade for West.
Oh, you say that. You know, our producer, Paul, who's in studio with us today, he's a huge Bulls fan, and he's not very optimistic about the 2017-2018 season after that went down. You surprised to see that trade take place?
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I don't know what the Bulls are doing. I mean, they were barely a playoff team to begin with last season, so they're looking like a low lottery pick this time around. So
okay.
I think they're just, you know, rebuilding from zero.
Okay, well, let's talk about the Knicks. I mean, where do you think Carmelo Anthony is eventually going to land? My sources tell me he doesn't want to go anywhere else except to Houston. He wants to come on down here to H-Town. Or do you think he's going to, you know, stay with the Knicks? What say you?
It looks extremely unlikely that he'll stay with the Knicks. I think I give that a 10 or 15% chance.
Wow.
I think he either wants to go to Houston or he wants to play with the Cavs. And both are not bad options for him. I think he might, I don't know how he would accept a role as a sixth man, but I see him being a sixth man on either team at the moment. And I think maybe at this stage of his career, that would be a good thing for him. He definitely needs, a new surroundings, let's put it that way. I think, you know, he wore out his welcome in New York and vice versa. He wants to get out of there.
What do you think, Motez? Let's assess his value. I mean, is he still a premier offensive threat? He's 33 years of age. I don't know why. When I think of Carmelo Anthony, I think of him being like late 30s. Seems like he's been around forever. But what do you think his value is? What's he bring to the table?
He's a fantastic spot-up shooter. He is still one of the top 3-4 scorers in the league, you know. Or when he's on fire, nobody can guard him. But the problem is he doesn't move quite as well as he used to. And he doesn't really, you know, everyone knows, he really doesn't play much defense. So you've got a stud who's a scorer. And I think if you put him in a role as a guy who really just needs to light up the offense as a sixth man, I think he could blossom that way. The only problem is he's never really sat in any team setting in his life aside from playing in the 2004 Olympics where he sulked on Larry Brown's bench and that team did terribly. But, you know, this is up to him, really. If he wants to change his game a little bit to suit the circumstances, he can. I still think he's a great offensive threat.
What do you think the future is for the Knicks?
I think this is another lottery year for them, unfortunately. You know, the French kid that they got at point guard, I don't know that much about him, but he seems to have a lot of upside. But, you know, they've got the Phil Jackson era was a disaster, I think, on many levels. They've got a new general manager now who can maybe, you know, start to turn things around. They've got some assets in place. Obviously, they want to try and rebuild around the Latvian kid. I don't see them competing for a playoff spot in the East.
You've been listening to the voice of Motez Bashar, CNN Sports feature writer, of course, author of his book, Beating the NBA, Tales from a Frugal Fan. One thing I've got to ask you, as we are running out of time, LeBron James, I mean, is he going to leave the Cavs after next year? Is he going to opt out after 2018?
I mean, it sure feels like it, right? That's what everyone is saying. And I tell you what, if the Lakers, he's going to be watching Lonzo Ball and the Lakers pretty closely. And who wouldn't want to play with Lonzo Ball, right? He seems to be the guy who gets the ball in the right place at the right time all the time. And I think LeBron has always kind of been the best point guard on every team he's played on. So to play with a distributor like that, I think, is a very appealing thing. Obviously, we know he's got the mansion in Brentwood. We know he loves the glitter of Hollywood. He's in movies now. So it is not too dissimilar situation with Shaq in Orlando moving to L.A. to blossom his multimedia career. I could see that happening with LeBron. And, you know, if things don't happen with the Cavs this season, he could take off. Now, from a basketball standpoint, I don't see why he would do it, because he goes to the finals every single year in the East, and now he would have to compete with the Warriors, which would be no cakewalk, and the Spurs and all the other, you know, tough teams in the West. But from a sort of empire-building position, right, I think maybe he'll do it.
Yeah, and it seems like it would make sense. CNN Sports feature writer Motez Bashar has been with us at the Next Generation of Sports Radio. That is SB Nation Radio. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Motez. We sincerely appreciate it. You stay safe, okay?
It's my absolute pleasure. And please, you and all your listeners out there, also stay safe. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Blessings to you. Much more coming your way right here in hour number two at SB Nation Radio. The Big E Sports Show, the fastest 2 hours in radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Before we get underway with our next segment, we want to pause and encourage all of our listeners who are tuning in tonight who want to help out the victims of Hurricane Harvey and make a difference by donating to the Red Cross. You can go to redcross.org. Today, you can help people affected by Hurricane Harvey. Let's continue to work together and help out so many that are hurting. Well, right now, college football is back, and that's what we're going to have in our next segment, a number of exciting games that will be on hand. And one team that you better keep your eye on is right here in the great state of Texas, and that is the TCU Horned Frogs. We are so delighted, always an honor to have back with us the voice of the Frogs, and that is the very talented Brian Estridge. Good evening, Brian.
How are you doing? You know, thanks for having me. And I'm glad you mentioned that about helping those folks in Houston, because that has been obviously top of mind for everyone here in the state of Texas for the last week. And it needs to stay top of mind. This doesn't need to kind of move to the back burner or anything like that. We need to keep them in our thoughts and our prayers and in the forefront of, you know, our daily lives as we can kind of go on to do our normal thing.
Sure.
And get ready for football this weekend. They can't. And it's a sad deal. It's going to be a long recovery there for the city of Houston. But, you know, as you well know, they're super strong, Big E, and they're going to be back, and it's going to be better than ever, and it's just going to take a little bit of time.
You know, I want to preview the season here in just a moment, but as I mentioned, you know, Hurricane Harvey, what I understand that the Rice football team has been actually practicing in Fort Worth at TCU while Houston, while we're dealing with all this flooding after Hurricane Harvey. I mean, TCU has reached out to many families, and they're making an impact, and to that, we say thank you.
Yeah, and I tell you, that is David Bailiff, who's the head coach at Rice, who's a defensive coordinator here under Gary Patterson for a while. So he's part of the family. And it's interestingly enough, the athletic director at TCU, Chris Elconi, was the athletic director at Rice at one point. I actually hired David. And so I think it was a natural to reach out to them to say, whatever you need, places available. And the city of Fort Worth really responded, too. They found him a hotel that was able to accommodate him. I know that a lot of folks in town have done things to help Rice football, like put together a little dob kit for him and things of that nature. So I think it's been as good of a week as it could have been, separated from their families like they've been.
The voice of the TCU Horned Frogs, Brian Esseridge, back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, the next generation of sports radio. So let's bring some cheers, some good news to all of our listeners across the country. TCU, of course, kicks off their season opener at home against Jackson State Tigers. Now, last year, Brian, the Frogs, let's get our listeners up to speed. You guys finished 6-7, 4-5 in the Big 12 Conference. What will it take for the Horned Frogs to establish a winning culture again?
Yeah, and I think that a couple of things had to change. I think one is, and Gary Patterson talked a bit about this, you had to get back to being a physical football team. And I think some of that was a lack of leadership. Only 8 seniors in last year's class, I think, had a lot to do with it. I think the other thing was what the offense had forced the defense into. The offense didn't have as consistent of a year as we had become accustomed to at TCU. They were on and off the field so quickly that the defense was spent a ton of time out there. And I think that there was not a lot of confidence between the two units toward the end of the year. And I think making the change at offensive coordinator with Sonny Cumbie now and taking over that role, I think in the addition of Chris Thompson as the offensive line coach who comes over from Arizona State, I think the addition of Sonny Dykes, the former head coach at Cal, I think all those things sort of add up now to, okay, there's a different attitude, there's a different air of confidence, and you really see a different Kenny Hill, to be quite honest with you. I think you're seeing a quarterback that is much more confident in his role, much more comfortable in his role, but also realizes he doesn't have to do it all. TCU led the country last year and dropped passes by receivers, and I think because of that, it forced Kenny to try to be more than he was, and he doesn't have to be perfect. I think Gary Patterson's handled him much differently this year and would tell you that. And I think because of that, you see a different leader out there on the field and Kenny Hill. So I think there's a lot that's going to change. I think there's a few things, obviously, that had to change as we talked about. But I think you're going to see a totally different TCU team when they hit the field Saturday night.
Okay, the voice of the TCU Horned Frogs, Brian Esseridge, with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And I am so glad that you bring up the quarterback position, Kenny Hill, because in order for the Frogs to be better in 2017, improvement from him is going to be critical. So what did he work on in the offseason to perhaps even be in better rhythm and in sync with his receivers and, you know, building that relationship?
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because I asked him that same question. I said, hey, what did you work on the offseason? He said everything.
Okay.
He said it was one of those where, I worked on throwing the ball better. I wanted to be in more a better rhythm with my receivers. I worked on my footwork. I worked on studying film. I worked on my attitude. I worked on what I was eating. He literally went down the list of everything. He said, I just wanted to be a different player. And he used an interesting phrase. He said, I wanted to change the narrative about Kenny Hill. I wanted people to think differently about me. And said the only way that I could do that was to change myself. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this narrative that he talked about actually plays out.
You know, it sounds like what you're saying, a real maturation process has taken place since transferring from Texas A&M. And Brian, you've seen this before. I just have to wonder, as a student athlete, how difficult it is to transfer to a new school, learn a completely different system, learn a completely new playbook, and what the expectations are from their head coach.
And I think there's a key word in here, and I think that is learn a new culture too. And I think the culture was a lot different at A&M than it is at TCU. And I think there is a learning curve there. But I think maturation's a good word. He's simply grown up. He seems like a different player.
Wow.
Seems like a different person. And so let's see if does that correlate to the field. That's a great question. I know right now his head coach is much more comfortable with it. His head coach is really pleased with the kind of camp that he had. And remember now, here's a guy that was going to be pressed coming into fall by Sean Robinson. The freshman who the Frogs signed out of DeSoto, who's a highly recruited player that many people thought may come in and actually push Kenny Hill for the job. But Kenny had such a good fall that never really was a question. So I think that tells you and puts in perspective a little bit about how hard he did work in the offseason and how much better he is.
Okay, so you highlight Kenny Hill. Just overall, what's your assessment of how the offense has looked in fall camp?
Yeah, I think the big difference for this offense is an offensive line. I think Chris Thompson's influence as the offensive line coach is immediate. Their technique is better. They're in much better shape. They're a little bit more physical than they were up front. So I think you're going to see an immediate improvement in offensive line. I think wide receiver, they're so talented, so athletic, so fast. The key for them is that they've got to be able to catch the football. That was the problem last year that they had. I think that's where a guy like John Diars comes in. The transfer from LSU is now in the second year in the program, a leader at one of the inside wide receiver spots. I think you also see some of these young guys who they've signed come in and say, you know what, last year was last year. I mean, we don't care about that. This is what we're all about this year. This is how we're going to be. This is what we're going to do. And so I think you're going to see a team that is much more confident offensively, much more physical, not as finesse. I don't think this is going to be a team that on third and one's throwing the fade every time anymore. So I think that that's where this team's going to be totally different.
Okay, you talk about improvements offensively, the physicality defensively, but I understand in the offseason, TCU really needed to get bigger along their defensive line. Were they able to accomplish that?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. I think through addition of players, but also through hard work in the weight room, they've done that. They're much bigger up front than they were, and it's an opportunity now for them to get back to being a physical defense. I don't think they'll be on the field nearly as long. I think the depth in the defensive backfield will allow them to be a little more aggressive up front, more than they had been in years past, or at least in the last year. And so I think because of that, you're going to see the old TCU defense again come back out. I think
nice.
You've got defensive linemen up front who can create some havoc, and Ross Blacklock and Chris Bradley. But you're going to see a true freshman in Corey Bethley, who's going to play a lot up front. But, you know, averaging about 275 or so when you include the defensive ends, and they're super quick on the edge. And I think that's what Gary Patterson likes. Ben Bonigou, who's a guy who I think is really going to emerge. He's a junior at defensive end. He, along with the addition of Ty Summers. Summers, of course, the linebacker who's now moved to defensive end. I think they've all got it. They both got a chance to be special along the edge. And then don't sleep on a kid like L.J. Collier, who's about 6'4", 280.
Wow.
Can create havoc up front. And I think he's got a chance to be real special.
Oh,
he runs
nice
about
soul.
A 4.740 at that. So I think there's a guy who can really make a difference for him. So let's see how these young guys come together up front. I think by the end of the year, that group may end up being a strength of this defense.
Such an exciting time of the year as we get ready for the start of the college football season. The voice of the TCU Horned Frogs, Brian Estridge, is back with us at SB Nation Radio. TCU is not in the top 25. In your mind, Brian, are they underrated?
Underrated, maybe. I don't know that they should be in the top 25 at the start of the year. And I'm basing this on a couple of reasons. Not because I don't think they're not talented enough. I think they are. I think they'll be well coached. But they got something to prove. Last year's team was disappointing. You know, Kenny Hill didn't have the best year, maybe because of outside circumstances. You know, this offensive line has got to prove that it can be more physical. So I think there's a lot of questions on this group. The Big 12 is going to be terrifically tough. The schedule doesn't lend itself to a ton of wins late in the year. So I think all those things added up. Should they start outside the top 25? Yeah, I think they should. I think that's probably fair where they are. Will they finish inside the top 25? I think they will. I think this is an 8-9, get lucky, maybe a 10-win team, because I always think that Gary Patterson's good for a win or two that you don't expect. But I think this is a team that if they come together, reach their potential, they've avoided the injury bug so far for the most part, and if they can continue to do that, I think they've got a chance to be in the upper division of this league when it's all said and done.
Okay, you've mentioned head coach Gary Patterson a couple of times. He's accustomed to winning ways, one of the premier coaches in the country. What was the offseason like for him? He's got to be hungry. He's got to be thirsty to want to get after it.
Yeah, the season for him this year is that he was healthy. Last year in the offseason, he had a knee replacement.
Okay.
He wasn't able
wow.
to spend as much time as he likes with guys in the offseason and being they got all of Gary Patterson this year. They got the full finished product. And so I think that made it a lot different for not only them, but for him. And you see a rejuvenated Gary. He joked earlier in the week that he's the only 57-year-old coach who was happy that he tweaked his hamstring running hundreds. He's gotten in better shape. He's been getting after it himself. And so I think because of that, I think it's carried over to this team. There's a lot more energy on the field right now with this group, and I think it started at the top.
It's going to be a lot of fun to watch Saturday night. And, of course, we've been going one-on-one with the voice of the TCU Horned Frogs. That is the very talented Brian Estridge. Have a great call. Thank you, Brian.
Always appreciate the time. Thank you.
You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way. SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. So excited because the countdown to kickoff, it is here. We are ready to talk some college football, of course, the Big 12 Conference. So my go-to guy, as always, we pack our bags. We go to Norman, Oklahoma to visit with a senior writer of OU Insider. He is also the radio host of KREF Total Sports 1400 in Norman, Oklahoma. And James, good to have you on the program tonight and to bring some cheer to all of our listeners because we are hurting mightily down here in Houston.
Man, it's, I want to pass along. I've, you know, sent a little money, what I can do to help, and I want to pass along my prayers to everybody down there. You know, I've got friends like the great Spencer Tillman who lives down there and some other people that are from Houston. And, of course, all those guys from Houston and that area that are on the OU football team, of course, and Calvin Thibodeau is a coach, and he's from that area. That's down there. Ruffy McNeil's a Texas guy, and you know, so many people that are on the, you know, dealing with at OU that are down there. I'm so proud to be a sports reporter and cover guys like J.J. Watt, who has raised over $10 million. I've always been an Ellen DeGeneres fan. She's given $1 million. Yeah. There's so many people that are rallying around. I thought it was really cool. Some of the sports teams like the Astros and some others that are donating $4 to $5 million. But, you still pain so much for all those people that have lost their homes. Then you hear the tragic news that, you know, families have died and people have passed away. And, yeah. You know, the greatest force that we ever deal with is Mother Nature. We can't whip her. You hope you get along with her. You hope she's kind to you. But, you know, we've had devastation in Oklahoma with tornadoes and things before. And, you know, it's just what it is. And the great thing about humanity is that, you know, we usually rally around each other, and just like that, we've done in Oklahoma many times. I know they'll do the same thing in Texas. And Big E, I love you and your family, and I'm always praying for you guys. And I hope just in our few minutes that we're going to do this show, we can bring some joy to people.
Absolutely, the outreach has been tremendous. Thank you, James, for those words. And talk to me about this, because you're right. Oklahoma is very familiar with this type of, you know, tragedy, difficulty with all the tornadoes from the past. How has the new head coach in Lincoln Riley, I mean, so many recruits come out of the state of Texas. How has he responded and reacted to what has happened in South Texas?
Well, they've been very proactive, you know, and that's because Joe Castiglione's the AD. He's a proactive guy. And so, you know, OU made sure they had money to cover, because a number of these players, as soon as they got their stipend, which is, you know, the extra money that was earned from television, they just started mailing it and emailing it down to their folks down in Texas. Well, OU replenished that, and OU got approval to send more money down to those families. And so they've been proactive doing that. No use sending a truck down there with equipment, which it's not equipment, you know, it's shirts, T-shirts, socks, all that kind of stuff that, you know, you feel people that are in this situation would need. So OU's been pretty proactive at that. And Lincoln Riley's very concerned. Lincoln's from Muleshoe, so, you know, he's from Texas, and, you know, he's got family all over the place down there. So how about Joe Washington? Joe Washington is a Port Arthur, Texas legend.
That's right.
And, you know, I call Joe right about the time that I'm looking on Twitter and I see the massive amount of water and that their hospital has to be evacuated. And, you know, Joe's trying to stay calm, but he couldn't talk very long because, you know, he had to try to get a hold of people. And, you know, and when you're, like J.J. Watt said, when you're not there, you can't help. All you can do is send money and your prayers, and that's all you can do. But OU's got the means to be proactive and really help in this deal, and I think they're certainly trying to put the right foot forward and do so.
It's good to have with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. That is James Hale. Give him a follow at Twitter, at jhale24. He is the senior writer with OU Insider. He is the host of Total Sports on KREF 1400 in Norman, Oklahoma. Okay, so let's shift gears, James. Talk to me about, okay, the Sooners, their season opener against UTEP. What are some of the biggest problems that UTEP will present?
Well, they have a really good offensive line. That's the strength of their team. They have an All-American guard in Will Hernandez, and he's a really good player. So they've got five guys that have started at one point or another on the offensive line. So OU's revamped 4-3 defense and, you know, some newcomers on that defense. Think about this, E. Since 1975, OU has never started a freshman linebacker. That's the last time they started a freshman Mike linebacker.
Wow.
And they're starting one in this game in Kenneth Murray. Now, that's a long time, right?
Yeah.
They also, at one of their safeties, is Robert Barnes, who's the son of Reggie Barnes, who was an all-Big Eight performer.
Absolutely.
At linebacker back in the day. And Robert is a really good player, and when the Sooners go to the nickel, he's going to be in the game. So you've got young players. You've got a redshirt freshman in John Michael Terry that was battling with Murray for that starting spot before he had a sprained knee that took him out of that competition. But he's back, and he's a key backup at that spot. So you've got some youth. You've got some experience. You've got a new defense. Ruffin McNeil's now, you know, as an assistant coach on this defense. And that's going to assist Mike Stoops with all that experience they've got. Kerry Cooks is a really good DB coach. Tim Kitch is a really good linebacker coach, and Calvin Thibodeau's coaching defensive ends. But they're throwing a new defense, and now they're going to be multiple like Coach Mike has always wanted them to be. I mean, because they're going to run some 3-4-2. You're going to see them jump into the bear to take advantage of Curtis Bolton. Sometimes I call it the bear. I don't know what you call six guys up there, you know. But you know, it's, you know,
yeah.
Well, you know, hey. You know, I don't. You know, when Chicago was doing that with Fincic and those guys, you know, sometimes they had eight guys up there, you know. So, I don't think OU's going to go with eight, but you know, they've got some guys they're going to throw in there, and you know, and UTEP will do enough things offensively. Whether they have the skill to really challenge OU, at least they've got the offensive line to challenge and make it a fight. And you know, they've lost their leading rusher from last year. They've got some new receivers. And, I don't know if they have the firepower on the outside or at quarterback to really challenge OU, but at least formation-wise, they can force OU to line up in a right. And, again, that's what, when I talked to Coach Mike earlier this week and he talked about this, he said the biggest thing is, can we get lined up right? Can we call signals? Can we make adjustments? If we see something that we don't recognize, can you at least line up in the base, and can you light your hair on fire and go chase the ball? And those are the things that he wants to see out of his guys, because if worse comes to worse, if you're hustling, chasing the ball, you could overcome some things, you know. But I think that's the challenge for OU on defense.
We are so excited. The start of the 2017 college football season, it is finally here. And it is an exciting time for the Oklahoma Sooners. Talk to me about first-year head coach Lincoln Riley. You know, watching him online and at the press conference, gosh, he sounds like Bob Stoops.
and you know what? Lincoln is such a cool dude. He would take that as a compliment. You know, some guys always want to put their own stamp on things, and he is going to put his own stamp on things, but Lincoln is very complimentary of his mentor and a guy that he loves very much, and Bob Stoops.
Sure.
And he would love it if you said that. Lincoln so far has been everything that you hoped a new head coach would be. I mean, everything. I mean, he's hit everything right on. It's been a home run in everything that he's done. Whether or not it's the what he said at the acceptance speech, what he did right away in the recruiting trail, the excitement that he had about being in the coaching office and how big it was, and he's talking to recruits going, man, can you believe this? I'm going to, hey, you can bring your friends. We can party in this thing. This thing is big. You know, and he's so youthful, you know. He's just, you know, so excited. He's, you know, telling him, I'm from Muleshoe, man. This is bigger than my house.
Yeah.
You know, and he's getting into these things, and these kids can relate to that. And then all the media that he's done, all the shows that he's been on, he's hit a home run every time. How he's dealt with player discipline. He's been strong in what he's had to decide to do. That wasn't easy for him to suspend Will Sunderland. That's a starting free safety. But he had no choice. And, you know, how he handled, you know, a couple of other things that have happened since then, you know. And how he's handling this situation in Houston with some of his young guys and players. And, you know, the questions about, can you really call plays and be a head coach? And he really thinks he can, and he explains it every time, even though he's been asked about this a million times. And he's been great. You know, I had a chance to talk to him yesterday, and I've been telling everybody he's about as relaxed as a new head coach could be. You know, he's tried to think of everything because that's the way he is. And, you know, he's been a joy to deal with. Now we just got to see if he can coach. I mean, that's the only thing we don't know. We know he can be a great offensive coordinator, you know, but we don't know what he does as a head coach. And that variable of calling plays as the head coach is always out there. So we're kind of curious what he does on Saturday. He still doesn't know if he's calling heads or tails. You know, I mean, he, you know, the days that we really thought the captains just did that, no. The head coach tells the captain what he wants him to call. Second of all, you know, he says that he doesn't script plays, so he doesn't know what he's going to call before he actually finds out about the wind and everything else, which I find amazing. I mean, I thought that he would, you know, but, and he doesn't know if he's coming out in front of the team or in the middle of the team or behind the team. He hasn't decided that either. Bob always came out towards the end of the team. He wanted the players to enjoy coming out of the tunnel. But, you know, a lot of coaches do, and Lincoln's not sure how he's going to do that yet. I said, well, you better hurry and find out, you know.
We're all anxious. We want to know.
I mean, it's like, you know, you better figure it out, you know. So, no, but see, that's what's really great. He's got a pretty good sense of humor, and he kind of laughs about some of this stuff. But that's been so rare, E, because, hey, after 19 years with Bob, you got used to everything that he did, right? Well, this has been new, and that's been pretty fun to cover up to this point.
Okay, the senior writer with OU Insider, host of Total Sports on KREF. Give him a follow at Twitter, at JHale24. Okay, one thing I want to ask you, listening to you talk about Lincoln Riley, are you surprised just how quickly he has transitioned into his new role as a head coach?
No, not because I know him, and I've always thought he's a real intelligent guy, but yet he's not one of those intelligent guys you don't like to be around. You know, he's real. He's pretty cool. He's youth. His wife is a cool lady. How they handle their kids, you know, Sloan, their oldest daughter, is one of those spirited young women that I think is going to be president someday or something. You know, but she's always got something to say. And, you know, so he's just like all of us. He got a family, and as they're growing up, you know, and he's got this big-time job, and we keep asking him stuff like, well, you're going to have a bunch of family in, and you're trying to find out how he's going to handle things, and he's really trying to low-key this as much as possible. Like he said, he wasn't going to have a lot of family. He said, I'm not necessarily turning people away, but we're kind of letting them know that, boy, let us get our feet underneath us first before all of Muleshoe comes up to the game or something, you know, so he can handle it. Because when they do, he's going to want to spend a few minutes with them. And he just doesn't know if he can do that before the first game. And he certainly knows he can't do it next week before Ohio State. So he's trying to get his feet underneath him. And from that standpoint, I'm not surprised how he's doing things, because as an offensive coordinator, I was impressed with his preparation, how he handled defeat and bad plays. He always took the brunt of the criticism and blamed himself. Yeah, Baker threw an interception there, but that's my fault. I called the wrong play, and then I called the wrong audible, you know, and so he always blames himself, and I think that's a great quality that he has, because, you know, behind closed doors, then he's going, hey, that's a bad play you did there. You didn't read this right, but he's not going to do it publicly. And those are some things I've liked about him as an offensive coordinator, and I bet you we see similar stuff happen as a head coach. So I'm not surprised. He's a pretty sharp individual, but we still don't know what happens when, you know, the red light goes on and the game starts, and, you know, he's got to make calls, and is he going to go for it on fourth down? Is he going to be real aggressive? Is he not? Especially when he's got those defensive coaches in his ear saying, we need you to punt here. We need some field position here, you know, and so I don't know how he handles all that, you know, so that's going to be the interesting thing about it.
Hey, the college football conversation continues with James Hale, senior writer with OU Insider and host of Total Sports on KREF Radio, after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back to hour number two at SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. So excited because the countdown to kickoff, it is here. We are ready to talk some college football, of course, the Big 12 Conference. So my go-to guy, as always, we pack our bags. We go to Norman, Oklahoma to visit with a senior writer of OU Insider. He is also the radio host of KREF Total Sports 1400 in Norman, Oklahoma. And James, good to have you on the program tonight and to bring some cheer to all of our listeners because we are hurting mightily down here in Houston.
Man, it's, I want to pass along. I've, you know, sent a little money, what I can do to help, and I want to pass along my prayers to everybody down there. You know, I've got friends like the great Spencer Tillman who lives down there and some other people that are from Houston. And, of course, all those guys from Houston and that area that are on the OU football team, of course, and Calvin Thibodeau is a coach, and he's from that area. That's down there. Ruffin McNeil's a Texas guy. And, you know, so many people that are on the, you know, dealing with at OU that are down there. I'm so proud to be a sports reporter and cover guys like J.J. Watt, who has raised over $10 million. I've always been an Ellen DeGeneres fan. She's given $1 million. Yeah. There's so many people that are rallying around. I thought it was really cool. Some of the sports teams like the Astros and some others that are donating $4 to $5 million. But, you know, you still pain so much for all those people that have lost their homes. Then you hear the tragic news that, you know, families have died and people have passed away. And, you know, the greatest force that we ever deal with is Mother Nature. We can't whip her. You hope you get along with her. You hope she's kind to you. But, you know, we've had devastation in Oklahoma with tornadoes and things before. And, you know, it's just what it is. And the great thing about humanity is that, you know, we usually rally around each other, and just like that we've done in Oklahoma many times, I know they'll do the same thing in Texas. And Big E, I love you and your family, and you know, I'm always praying for you guys, and I hope just in our few minutes that we're going to do this show, we can bring some joy to people.
Absolutely. The outreach has been tremendous. Thank you, James, for those words. And talk to me about this, because you're right. Oklahoma is very familiar with this type of, you know, tragedy, difficulty with all the tornadoes from the past. How has the new head coach in Lincoln Riley, I mean, so many recruits come out of the state of Texas. How has he responded and reacted to what has happened in South Texas?
Well, they've been very proactive, you know, and that's because Joe Castiglione's the AD. He's a proactive guy. And so, you know, OU made sure they had money to cover, because a number of these players, as soon as they got their stipend, which is, you know, the extra money that was earned from television, they just started mailing it and emailing it down to their folks down in Texas. Well, OU replenished that, and OU got approval to send more money down to those families. And so they've been proactive doing that. No use sending a truck down there with equipment, which it's not equipment, you know, it's shirts, T-shirts, socks, all that kind of stuff that, you know, you feel people that are in this situation would need. So OU's been pretty proactive at that. And Lincoln Riley's very concerned. Lincoln's from Muleshoe, so, you know, he's from Texas, and, you know, he's got family all over the place down there. So how about Joe Washington? Joe Washington is a Port Arthur, Texas legend.
That's right.
And, you know, I call Joe right about the time that I'm looking on Twitter and I see the massive amount of water and that their hospital has to be evacuated. And, you know, Joe's trying to stay calm, but he couldn't talk very long because, you know, he had to try to get a hold of people. And, you know, and when you're, like J.J. Watt said, when you're not there, you can't help. All you can do is send money and your prayers, and that's all you can do. But OU's got the means to be proactive and really help in this deal, and I think they're certainly trying to put the right foot forward and do so.
It's good to have with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. That is James Hale. Give him a follow at Twitter, at jhale24. He is the senior writer with OU Insider. He is the host of Total Sports on KREF 1400 in Norman, Oklahoma. Okay, so let's shift gears, James. Talk to me about, okay, the Sooners, their season opener against UTEP. What are some of the biggest problems that UTEP will present?
Well, they have a really good offensive line. That's the strength of their team. They have an All-American guard in Will Hernandez, and he's a really good player. So they've got five guys that have started at one point or another on the offensive line. So OU's revamped 4-3 defense and, you know, some newcomers on that defense. Think about this, E. Since 1975, OU has never started a freshman linebacker. That's the last time they started a freshman Mike linebacker.
Wow.
And they're starting one in this game in Kenneth Murray. Now, that's a long time, right?
Yeah.
They also, at one of their safeties, is Robert Barnes, who's the son of Reggie Barnes, who was an all-Big Eight performer.
Absolutely.
At linebacker back in the day. And Robert is a really good player, and when the Sooners go to the nickel, he's going to be in the game. So you've got young players. You've got a redshirt freshman in John Michael Terry that was battling with Murray for that starting spot before he had a sprained knee that took him out of that competition. But he's back, and he's a key backup at that spot. So you've got some youth. You've got some experience. You've got a new defense. Ruffin McNeil's now, you know, as an assistant coach on this defense. And that's going to assist Mike Stoops with all that experience they've got. Kerry Cooks is a really good DB coach. Tim Kitch is a really good linebacker coach. And Calvin Thibodeau is coaching defensive ends. But they're throwing a new defense, and now they're going to be multiple like Coach Mike has always wanted them to be. I mean, because they're going to run some 3-4 too. You're going to see them jump into the bear to take advantage of Curtis Bolton. Sometimes I call it the bear. I don't know what you call six guys up there, you know. But you know, it's you know,
yeah.
Well, you know, hey, you know, I don't, you know, when Chicago was doing that with Fincic and those guys, you know, sometimes they had eight guys up there, you know. So, I don't think OU's going to go with eight, but you know, they've got some guys they're going to throw in there, and you know, UTEP will do enough things offensively. Whether they have the skill to really challenge OU, at least they've got the offensive line to challenge and make it a fight. And, you know, they've lost their leading rusher from last year. They've got some new receivers. And, I don't know if they have the firepower on the outside or at quarterback to really challenge OU, but at least formation-wise, they can force OU to line up in a right. And, again, that's what when I talked to Coach Mike earlier this week and he talked about this, he said the biggest thing is can we get lined up right? Can we call signals? Can we make adjustments? If we see something that we don't recognize, can you at least line up in the base and can you light your hair on fire and go chase the ball? And those are the things that he wants to see out of his guys because if worse comes to worse, if you're hustling, chasing the ball, you can overcome some things, you know, but I think that's the challenge for OU on defense.
We are so excited. The start of the 2017 college football season, it is finally here, and it is an exciting time for the Oklahoma Sooners. Talk to me about first-year head coach Lincoln Riley. You know, watching him online and at the press conference, gosh, he sounds like Bob Stoops.
and you know what? Lincoln is such a cool dude, he would take that as a compliment. You know, some guys always want to put their own stamp on things, and he is going to put his own stamp on things. But Lincoln is very complimentary of his mentor and a guy that he loves very much, and Bob Stoops.
Sure.
And he would love it if you said that. Lincoln so far has been everything that you hoped a new head coach would be. I mean, everything. I mean, he's hit everything right on. It's been a home run in everything that he's done. Whether or not it's the what he said at the acceptance speech, what he did right away in the recruiting trail, the excitement that he had about being in the coaching office and how big it was, and he's talking to recruits going, man, can you believe this? I'm going to, hey, you can bring your friends. We can party in this thing. This thing is big. You know, and he's so youthful, you know, he's just, you know, so excited. He's, you know, telling him, I'm from Muleshoe, man. This is bigger than my house.
Yeah.
You know, and he's getting into these things, and these kids can relate to that. And then all the media that he's done, all the shows that he's been on, he's hit a home run every time. How he's dealt with player discipline, he's been strong in what he's had to decide to do. That wasn't easy for him to suspend Will Sunderland. That's a starting free safety. But he had no choice. And, you know, how he handled, you know, a couple of other things that have happened since then, you know, and how he's handling this situation in Houston with some of his young guys and players. And, you know, the questions about can you really call plays and be a head coach, and he really thinks he can, and he explains it every time, even though he's been asked about this a million times, and he's been great. You know, I had a chance to talk to him yesterday, and I've been telling everybody he's about as relaxed as a new head coach could be. You know, he's tried to think of everything because that's the way he is. And, you know, he's been a joy to deal with. Now we just got to see if he can coach. I mean, that's the only thing we don't know. We know he can be a great offensive coordinator, you know, but we don't know what he does as a head coach. And that variable of calling plays as the head coach is always out there. So we're kind of curious what he does on Saturday. He still doesn't know if he's calling heads or tails. You know, I mean, the days that we really thought the captains just did that, no. The head coach tells the captain what he wants him to call. Second of all, you know, he says that he doesn't script plays, so he doesn't know what he's going to call before he actually finds out about the wind and everything else, which I find amazing. I mean, I thought that he would, you know, but, and he doesn't know if he's coming out in front of the team or in the middle of the team or behind the team. He hasn't decided that either. Bob always came out towards the end of the team. He wanted the players to enjoy coming out of the tunnel. But, you know, a lot of coaches do, and Lincoln's not sure how he's going to do that yet. And I said, well, you better hurry and find out, you know.
We're all anxious. We want to know.
I mean, it's you know, you better figure it out, you know. So, no, but see, that's what's really great. He's got a pretty good sense of humor, and he kind of laughs about some of this stuff. But that's been so rare, E, because, hey, after 19 years with Bob, you got used to everything that he did, right? Well, this has been new, and that's been pretty fun to cover up to this point.
Okay, the senior writer with OU Insider, host of Total Sports on KREF. Give him a follow at Twitter, at JHale24. Okay, one thing I want to ask you, listening to you talk about Lincoln Riley, are you surprised just how quickly he has transitioned into his new role as a head coach?
No, not because I know him, and I've always thought he's a real intelligent guy, but yet he's not one of those intelligent guys you don't like to be around. You know, he's real. He's pretty cool. He's youth. His wife is a cool lady. How they handle their kids, you know, Sloan, their oldest daughter, is one of those spirited young women that I think is going to be president someday or something. You know, but she's always got something to say. And, you know, so he's just like all of us. You got a family, and as they're growing up, you know, and he's got this big-time job, and we keep asking him stuff like, well, you're going to have a bunch of family in, and you're trying to find out how he's going to handle things, and he's really trying to low-key this as much as possible. Like he said, he wasn't going to have a lot of family. He said, I'm not necessarily turning people away, but we're kind of letting them know that, boy, let us get our feet underneath us first before all of Mule Shoe comes up to the game or something, you know, so he can handle it. Because when they do, he's going to want to spend a few minutes with them. And he just doesn't know if he can do that before the first game. And he certainly knows he can't do it next week before Ohio State. So he's trying to get his feet underneath him. And from that standpoint, I'm not surprised how he's doing things. Because as an offensive coordinator, I was impressed with his preparation, how he handled defeat and bad plays. He always took the brunt of the criticism and blamed himself. Yeah, Baker threw an interception there, but that's my fault. I called the wrong play, and then I called the wrong audible, you know, and so he always blames himself, and I think that's a great quality that he has, because, you know, behind closed doors, then he's going, hey, that's a bad play you did there. You didn't read this right, but he's not going to do it publicly. And those are some things I've liked about him as an offensive coordinator, and I bet you we see similar stuff happen as a head coach. So I'm not surprised. He's a pretty sharp individual, but we still don't know what happens when, you know, the red light goes on and the game starts, and, you know, he's got to make calls, and is he going to go for it on fourth down? Is he going to be real aggressive? Is he not? Especially when he's got those defensive coaches in his ear saying, we need you to punt here. We need some field position here, you know, and so I don't know how he handles all that, you know, so that's going to be the interesting thing about it.
Hey, the college football conversation continues with James Hale, senior writer with OU Insider and host of Total Sports on KREF Radio, after this quick break.